One of the best success stories in the history of local media in the 518. From Town Square Media all the way to Denver, and now a superstar in the Denver market doing big things on radio, Afternoon Drive. My guy, Zach Bye, joins us on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. Zachary.
Man, what a cool introduction, Roger. It's great to be with you once again, man. Been looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. So we've got it. We're still talking about what Denver did or what the Giants did not do on Sunday. I mean, the Giants give up 33 points in the fourth quarter, a total meltdown on defense, and I'm sure you were there watching this unfold.
Yeah, it was like quite literally one of the greatest comebacks in the history of sports, and that's not really an exaggeration.
No.
You know, the first time in the history of NFL football where a team goes scoreless for the first three quarters and hangs 33 in the fourth quarter. I mean, this team had a win probability, according to ESPN's next-gen stats. The Giants, let's just look at it from the Giants' standpoint. The Giants had a win probability with under 7 minutes in the fourth quarter of 99.8% likelihood to win the game, meaning that the Denver Broncos had a 0.02 chance to win the game. I mean, it was one of the most improbable things that I have ever seen. I still can't believe it here several days later. And, you know, from the Denver perspective, it was a day where they're celebrating the Super Bowl 50 10-year anniversary team. So you have DeMarcus Ware and Aqib Talib and Peyton Manning and all these great players back at Mile High. And simultaneously, they're putting Demaryius Thomas posthumously into the Ring of Fame, who was on that Super Bowl 50 team. So there was so much emotion in the building that day. And then for the first three quarters to go the way that it did for the Giants and the shoe on the other foot for the Broncos, but then to have that fourth quarter happen and fall the way that it did. I mean, people out here are saying like angels in the end zone type of deal. I mean, just a magical, magical finish that I am confident that we will only see once in this lifetime.
I couldn't agree more, man. I was listening to the game, and I don't know who the voice of the Denver Broncos is. You probably do, but I'm coming back from Ithaca. My son playing college football. Brady's at Ithaca playing college football, and I'm coming back, and I have the satellite radio on. I'm listening to the Broncos play-by-play on satellite radio, and I was flipping back and forth with a few other games because it was at one point it was 26-8 with 5 minutes and change to go. I'm like, this game's over. Giants are getting a big win, and they're making strides. I mean, the good thing about the Giants, Zach, is they are much better. I mean, Jackson Dart makes them much better. Cam Scattergoo makes them much better. They're going to compete. They're going to win a few more games this year. But I was going back and forth, and I'm like, my goodness. Denver just scored again. My goodness, you got Dart just threw a pick on third and five. What are they doing even throwing the football there? Shouldn't they be running it and punting the ball back to Denver? I mean, two missed extra points, and then in the blink of an eye, Denver's down the field and they're kicking a game-winning field goal. I'm like, are you kidding me? Unbelievable Sunday finish.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the craziest things that I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
And that, by the way, that Denver Broncos play-by-play guy goes by the name of Dave Logan. You got to Google this guy. One of six players ever, along with Dave Winfield, to be drafted into the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the craziest things we've ever seen in the history of the sport. And I really like Jackson Dart. I like the way he moves. I love the way, even amidst the chaos, he keeps his eyes down the field. I mean, he's a young player. He's going to make mistakes. That interception was obviously backbreaking. I'm curious how this ages for Dart when more and more film gets out on him. And he reminds me, actually, and I'm sure you know, some of your listeners are not going to like this comparison, but I go back to how I felt in this market of Denver when Drew Locke started for the Broncos. He started the final five games of the 2019 season and went 4-1. And this was a guy, Drew Locke, who led the SEC in touchdown passes and was a really good athlete, plus athlete, really good arm, really mobile, and had the spunk that Dart has, where he's got this like swagger and moxie about him. Unfortunately, for Locke, the more and more tape that got out, I mean, these defensive coordinators are so smart, Roger, and I know you know this, but like, you start putting out your tendencies and, you know, game after game, and those games start to stack up and they get a book on you, man, that's when it really, and this is for goes for Bo Nix too right now, because the Broncos are 5-2, but this offense is not very good, and Bo Nix looks like he's in a sophomore slump. And I just think the more and more tape that gets out on these young players and these defensive coordinators start to figure things out, you know, it can age differently. So I'm curious how it continues to go for someone like Bo Nix and for sure for Jackson Dart.
Zach, did when that game was over, I see a story that came out yesterday. Did Sean Payton take a shot at Russell Wilson?
Yeah, he did. He did. He did. And Sean Payton, you know, and I said this to our audience yesterday, and a lot of times, you know, I say stuff that our audience really doesn't like, and I'll tell them, you know, the truth isn't meant to make you feel good. The truth is just the truth. And Sean Payton is vindictive. He can be mean-spirited. He's got a long memory. If he's got a chance to twist a knife, he will. He's got a terrible relationship with the National Football League itself and Commissioner Roger Goodell. I mean, this is a guy who, if he's got an opportunity to kick you while he's down, while you're down, he will. And he and Russell Wilson hated one another. Now, and again, I told my audience this yesterday, Russell Wilson was one of my least favorite athletes to cover. I mean, he was an elitist and an arrogant yep. person to a level that I don't think I've ever seen, and very much robotic-like. You know, he didn't feel like a real person 99% of the time. They did an investigation on his charity. Only 22 cents of every dollar was actually going to the charity in which he won Walter Payton Man of the Year. I mean, he totally misrepresented himself on several occasions. So I say that to say, like, this is not me sticking up for Russ. And again, I said this on my show yesterday. This is not me sticking up for Russ, because he's one of my least favorite ever, okay? I don't like the guy much at all. That being said, Sean Payton definitely took a shot, and Russell Wilson wasn't even playing in the game. And you had an opportunity to punch down, and you did. And you punched down. And Russell Wilson, believe it or not, for being one of my least favorite athletes I've covered in the last decade in Denver sports, he actually came off as human in that tweet as he ever has, because he normally doesn't. He doesn't weigh into those waters at all. He tries to stay above it, and everything's great, and everything's positive all the time. We would call it toxic positivity with Russell Wilson. So even though the house is on fire, everything is fine with Russ.
Yeah.
So that was actually kind of human to see Russ say, "You want to know what? Enough is enough, man. You took another shot at me. I'm finally going to take one at you." And again, despite me not being a Russ guy, I actually like the response from Russ.
Yeah, and if you don't know, Sean Payton at the in the press conference said something to the effect that I thought we wouldn't have to face Jackson Dart until a little bit later on in the season, meaning Russell Wilson would be playing in this game, and we wouldn't have to deal with Jackson Dart, who we know is really, really good, whatever. It was unnecessary, but it was definitely a shot at Russ. And by the way, I'm not a Russ guy either. I don't even know him. But what I found out was, how about this story, Zach? You know I'm pretty well connected with the Giants, right? I make one trip there a year, and they just line up the guests for me that I need. And it's all one-on-one interviews. I get the starting quarterback. I get the head coach. I get whoever the star guys are. I get them on the field. It's a quick interview. I'm done. I move on. I couldn't get Russell Wilson when I was there. And I said to Pat Hanlon, the PR guys, why can't I get Russ Wilson? I got Jackson Dart. He goes, because we don't handle Russell Wilson's interviews. And today, he doesn't feel like doing any interviews. It's out of our control. Imagine that. The team that's dealing with him, those PR people, they're not setting up his interviews.
Yeah, I mean, Roger, I could take the next hour and tell you real world stories about Russell Wilson that are just so cringeworthy. I mean, I'll just give you a couple really quick and rapid fire, like itemized fashion here. Russell Wilson and Sierra would go to the Nuggets game, and they would get four tickets at courtside, not because there's four of them, but because no one could sit next to them. They went to the Avalanche game and had the team game day operations in the box that they were sitting in hang plexiglass to the left and right of the box so people in the box next to them couldn't reach into the box, as if they're like, you know, like the Beatles landing in like 1960. Like, you know, he has people open his doors for him in real life. I mean, off camera. This is a guy who showed up to the first day of Broncos practice OTAs wearing his own jersey, like outside the facility, like wearing his own jersey just out and about. This is someone, again, who misrepresented his charity, and not only did he win Walter Payton Man of the Year because he hired a firm to create a campaign for him to win the award, and then USA Today does some digging and turns out only 22% of every dollar from his charity was going to the charity. And what was he doing with all the money? He was paying the leader of the charity six figures to live with him in Denver and work for him personally, which is illegal by definition. I mean, his teammates don't have his own phone number. This is someone who had his own trainer in the facility, had his own office in the facility, had six different travel spots where his team had to be flown by the Broncos to and from. I mean, it was unlike anything I've ever seen watching him operate when he was in a position of strength. This dude tried to basically take over the organization to a level that no one had ever seen. Like, I'm standing next to guys who played 15 years in the NFL, and they would watch his conglomerate of 12 people, two security guards per day at the facility, go in and out of the facility, and they'd be like, we've never seen anything like this before. So, yeah, Russ, I think he's misrepresented himself. I think some karma has caught up with him as more of his truth and his story gets told. But, not a Russ guy at all.
Zach, shifting to a more positive topic related to Denver sports and a team that's going to become the talk of the town in addition to the Broncos in your market is, of course, the Denver Nuggets, who will tip things off on Thursday on the road at the Golden State Warriors. What are your expectations for this Nuggets team heading into a loaded, and I do mean loaded, Zach, Western Conference yet again this year?
Yeah, it's a good question, man. I could not be higher on the Nuggets. And I play this basketball team like calling balls and strikes. So going into the 23 season, I was referring to the entire 22 season as the year before the year, as Jamal Murray was getting healthy and then coming back in 23. They added KCP and Bruce Brown. They go and win a championship. Since then, I have not been as high on the Denver Nuggets. The Calvin Booth, the GM for the last couple of years, tried to do this two timeline thing where he wanted to draft and develop while defending a championship, and even said to the Ringer that, hey, we're not going to be obsessed with going back to back. You know, we're trying to create a sustainable winner. And it's like, what? Dude, you have the greatest player in the world right now who's smack dab in the middle of his prime. Why are you trying to develop baby-faced one-and-dones, you know, around him? You need veteran players. Calvin Booth ends up getting fired. Michael Malone ends up getting fired. They retool the roster, and what did the new leadership do? They added veteran players all around him. Tim Hardaway Jr., veteran player who has played in the NBA Finals. Jonas Valanciunas should be the best backup Jokic has had in the Jokic era. Bruce Brown coming back into the fold. The trade with the Brooklyn Nets, Cam Johnson for Michael Porter Jr. That is a plus move for Denver. Cam Johnson is a better two-way player, a smarter player. So they got older, they're more veteran-laden, they're better defensively, and they got way smarter year over year. And this is a team in the Nuggets who pushed the world champions to seven games with an unhealthy Jamal Murray, an unhealthy Aaron Gordon, and a bunch of players around Jokic that shouldn't have been on the floor in major minutes in the second round of the NBA playoffs. That has all shifted. That has all shifted. So I think this team is going to be really good. And if they're healthy, I think they can go win the world championship.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And the West is really good. And then, of course, Knicks fans around here, Zach, they are thinking the Knicks can get to the world championship this year.
Well, you know what? We'll see about that. I'll say this about the Knicks. Their path is about as grooved of a path as any Eastern Conference team in the last 20 years. I mean, you look at the Bucks; they're just not what they were a few years ago. The Celtics are dealing with what the Celtics are dealing with. You have a team like Indiana who is just in the title game, whose best player goes down. So, like, if the Knicks can't make a run right now, the East is only going to get better over the next couple years. This is an incredible opportunity for those Knicks to go make a run and appear in the NBA Finals for the first time since I think I was in sixth grade at Lincoln Elementary School in Scotia, New York, when they lost to the San Antonio Spurs in the shortened lockout season.
It's a watered down East. You're right. Go for it, New York Knicks. If you don't do it this year, you're right. I don't know what it's going to happen. Zach, how are you doing, my man? Everything good with you? You still killing an afternoon drive and making everybody in the 518 really proud of your career?
Man, man. We're doing great. We're crushing it in the ratings. My co-host, Philip Lindsay, was as raw as a piece of meat that you wouldn't serve at a restaurant when he first started 2 years ago. And he has worked his tail off and gotten pretty good, and we are putting on really good shows, and we're number one in sports. Now we're just competing against classic rock and stations like that to be number one in the entire market. So really healthy. And I got to tell you this quick story while we're here together. Yesterday, the Denver Nuggets hosted an event where the media plays the coaching staff. You guys see the Celtics did this about a week or two ago. The Nuggets did the same thing. And I had not played basketball in 4.5 years because, Roger, I when I step onto that court, even in my mid-late 30s, like I only know one gear. And that's to play as hard as I can, and I kept on getting hurt. So I had not played basketball in 4.5 years. I picked up a ball on Saturday, started running around a little bit in preparation for yesterday's game. We played the Nuggets coaches, and they beat the brakes off us. I mean, these guys are huge. They're all in their 20s. I mean, they killed the media. But that being said, every year they give the MVP award to a media member, and I had never played in this game, no basketball in 4 years. Showed up yesterday, won the MVP.
Yes, sir. There you go. Still got some games, Akbai. Still got some games.
A couple of the coaches were like, I hit them with a move or two, and they're like, who is this guy? My hair's getting gray now. I got a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old. I don't play like that anymore. But it was pretty cool to have every TV station in the market, every radio station in the market, every digital outlet in the market, all at this thing, and they got to give me this MVP award in front of everyone. It's just hilarious.
You're putting on a show. Tell these boys they should do some homework on Zach Bye. Go back and look at his basketball career. They shouldn't be surprised,
Oh, my gosh. It was hilarious. So I had to share that with you. Me bringing that MVP award. My 7-year-old hasn't seen me play basketball, so he doesn't know me as a basketball player. And me coming through the door with this huge MVP trophy, he just about exploded. So really cool story, and I had to share that with my hometown friend.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, I can't wait to see you, give you a big old hug one of these days, whenever that happens to be. But we bring your name up a lot. You're a great success story. I use your name all the time when I talk about hard work, dedication, drive, wanting to get to the next level, and you use this platform that I'm on right now to help you get there. So good for you, man. I'm glad it's all going well. Make sure you tell your wife, and I haven't met your kids yet, but someday I will. But tell everybody that we said hello.
Yeah, and Roger, and unbeknownst to you, it's probably every other month I'll be telling some story, and your name gets brought up. So there's so many, we're in a market about 3 million people, and there's a lot of them who hear the name Roger Weiland and maybe have to do a Google search when I say, hey, it was me and my mentor Roger, or I was calling these games and it was me and Roger, and I've told you this in the past, and I tell my audience in Denver from time to time, there's no way that I'm in the position I'm in without your belief in me, starting when I was an intern at the College of St. Rose and just over that next decade. And you and I called over 300 University at Albany games together through football and basketball. And, later I started doing the lacrosse, but it was 7 years of really good stuff. And I'm just so appreciative and thankful. And I look at those days so fondly. I mean, once in a while, someone will say, it's a grind, to get to Denver. I'm like, kinda, I wasn't making money, but I was having the time of my life, doing back in the, 980 days and 104.5 and the Albany games. And it's just the best. And, such a huge part of my story. And I'm just so grateful. So, so grateful, even more grateful with every passing year that the opportunity that you afforded me. So appreciate you so much, man. Love you so much, and thank you so much for having
buddy.
Me.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, we love you too, man. Keep up the great work out there in Denver, and we'll talk soon.
All right, cheers, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Ron.
That's great. Thanks, Zach. That's Zach Bye. He's my guy. He's been. He was right here where I'm standing. We grinded for 7 years together. What do you say? We called over 300 games together.
That's a lot
between basketball and
seven
football.
Years together. We're on year four. I'm not in the 300 territory, but that's pretty cool. Yeah. Listening to the reminisce about the glory days for Zach, and he's great. And with Philip Lindsay, a former NFL player too, on his show on Afternoon Drive. Yeah.
Hour number two on Big Board Sports starts with our good friend Chuck Pollock, who joins us. He's been covering the Buffalo Bills for 50 years, and he does a great job with the Wellsville Sun, and that's where you can read what Chuck has to say about Buffalo, which is, I'm sure, plenty these days as we are now coming up on week 8 of the season. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
I'm very well, Roger. How about yourself?
We're good, man. We are good. What do you make of the Buffalo Bills 8 weeks into the season, and do you think they're feeling a little bit of the pressure coming from this New England Patriots team right now?
I think they're feeling a lot of pressure, Raj. This is things are not going well for this team. All of the things that we worried about before the season started have come to fruition. They've got issues at wide receiver. They have issues at the secondary. They can't stop the run. And, you know, he's still been pretty good, but Josh Allen has not been the same guy. And it's they've lost two in a row. And I will tell you this. If they go down to Charlotte and lose a third straight game, it's time to go up to 5.0 panic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not giving up on the Buffalo Bills. That's why I make that perfectly clear. Like, I think New England's just gotten a whole lot better, and Vrabel obviously makes a difference as the head coach. And their quarterback, Drake May, has been impressive. I mean, he's making major strides here with a new coach and what they're able to do, and I kind of like their schedule when I look at it right now the rest of the way. But I want to make perfectly clear, like, I'm not giving up on the Bills and Josh Allen. I think they're going to be right there at the end of the day. But the preseason was, like, is this the year they're going to beat the KC Chiefs in the playoffs and get to the Super Bowl? And I feel like that narrative, I don't feel as powerful about that narrative as I did in the preseason.
No, you're exactly right, and that's a fact. He's the real guy. He's the real deal, and so here they are in second place. All of a sudden, in the division, it's just things have kind of gone upside down. And, it's funny, Brandon Bean has been kind of cocky about it. He really was cocky with the media about, what do you mean we don't have the right number of receivers and we don't have a good air attack? And I, sorry, but this is where we are. And, one thing people forget, Raj, is that they had that 4-0 start, but the teams they beat were 3-21. And so this is not, they've not had an impressive win. And so all of this gets you wondering, and I'm with you. They're good enough. They should be there. Are they good enough to make the playoffs? Probably. But, you kind of look at the way things have gone and you say, is this team one and done?
Yeah, I mean, because again, I go back to preseason, which doesn't mean anything, but the build up to this season and the last couple of years, is this the year? I mean, I remember many years ago, you and I would talk about, is this year the Bills are going to make the playoffs? Now we're talking about, is this year the Bills are going to win the Super Bowl? And I'm not sure I'm seeing that right now of a team that's capable of doing that going into week 8, but that certainly could change.
It could change, but I'll tell you what, Raj, and you obviously can feel it and sense it, that kind of talk has been squelched for at least temporarily. And, one of the issues is, he's the guy in charge, but you're wondering about Sean McDermott. And here's why. They've got one of the premier running backs in the league, in James Cook. And the last couple of games, the last game, he had 11 carries. And people were like, wait a minute, you know, and of course, and I wrote about this last week because it was so embarrassing, but they had consecutive games where they had third and short and ran, well, the first one was an end around, and he collided with, well, a tight end around, he collided with Dawson Knox, they lost the fumble. The next game, they run an end around, and Elijah Moore loses the ball. They didn't lose a fumble, but they were put in a position where they had to punt and lost a chance to tie the game. And, you know, my argument is this, Raj. You know, it's his team, his being McDermott's. And, you know, I don't want to hear, well, this is what Joe Brady is calling. No, shut up. Yeah, it might be what he's calling, but guess who's in charge? You go to him and say, hey, Joe, I don't want to see a game where he has any less than 20 carries. This is a premier guy. And this is one thing that they were able to do pretty well is run the ball. It's you just get the idea there's, for lack of a better word, a discordant view with this team right now, and I don't know whether it gets straightened out. And I know this, if they conjure a way to lose to Carolina, there's going to be a lot of concern.
Chuck, you know, a bright spot, I think, on offense at tight end has been Dalton Kincaid through the first six games as a potential favorite target for Josh Allen. In a preseason, a lot of fans were, you know, expecting big things from him. Have you been impressed with Dalton Kincaid's body of work through the first six games of the year, Chuck?
No, I haven't, Michael. And the reason is that he's been playing hurt. You know, last year was supposed to be his year number two, and he was not much of a contributor. And they've gotten the ball to him some, but he's just not been as effective as you hoped he would be. And they're just little signs that there are things that are askew. And of course, Dalton is one of the guys that they really count on. But Keon Coleman, their second-round, first-round choice last year, twice now he has been disciplined for being late for meetings. And that's not a good vibe. He obviously is a talented guy, but he, you know, you don't want to hear that this guy just can't figure out a way to get to meetings on time, and he's been disciplined twice. And so there are all these little nagging viruses that are going on that somehow, and of course, you can argue it two ways. Was this the perfect week for the bye, or was this the worst possible time? I think it was probably a good time for this to come because McDermott admitted that they've got a lot to work on. And, you know, when you're talking about a team that's supposed to be one of the elites in the NFL, that's kind of discouraging. And he had one line that really stuck with me after the most recent loss. And he said, well, I guess we're going to have to go back to square one. Well, my God, you don't want to hear that as you go to the second half of the season.
I know one thing. They better figure out a way to beat the Carolina Panthers on the road this week.
Yeah, how about the way that team is? Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
You know, you go down there and lose to Andy Dalton. My God.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. Well, you and I'd have a whole different conversation this time
Absolutely.
Next week, Chuck. I'll tell you right now. Chuck, keep up the great work, man. We always appreciate your candid insight when it comes to the Buffalo Bills, and we carry the Bills on this radio station. But thank you, Chuck.
Raj, great to talk to you always, and Michael.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks,
my friend. Chuck Pollock, Wellsville Sun, covering the Buffalo Bills, and they are a 7.5-point favorite to beat the Carolina Panthers in a 1 p.m. kick on Sunday. All right, you Albany head football coach is Jared Ambrose, and he joins us here as it's on the road for the next two games, starting with Villanova, then William and Mary. Back-to-back road games, 3:30 kick on Saturday in Philadelphia. We'll be on the air, myself and MJ, with the play-by-play call. Coach Ambrose, good to see you last night at the TV station, and good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
I'm teasing ahead to our mic'd up segment because the one and the only Frank Rocco does make a few appearances.
Oh, no.
And MJ, you don't know this, but Frank Rocco makes a few appearances on this radio show from time to time. So our audience knows him as the one and the only. And Coach Ambrose, we had him, with your permission, had him mic'd up at practice yesterday. And Frank Rocco works in the equipment room and has for, yeah, you know, I don't know, 30 years at UAlbany. And I thought he put on a little bit of a show last night. Coach Ambrose, what did you think?
Frank puts on a show whether there's a camera or not.
Yes, he does. And he was in rare form. Sometimes when he wears the mic, he goes silent, but he wasn't silent yesterday. So watch the UAlbany Weekly Football Coaches Show on My4 Saturday morning at 11:30, or you can always check it out on the UAlbany Football website. It'll be up there at the end of the week. It's also on Instagram and YouTube and other media platforms. All right, Coach, let's go back and review here like we like to say. What did you see in that Rhode Island game against a really good opponent?
Not much. You know, not many good things. You know, we turned the ball over four times, and we let a quarterback go 19 for 20. You know, I think the only positivity you saw was we came out of the locker room at halftime, and we had some resolve and fight to us, and we took the momentum back in the third quarter. But just, you know, too little too late. We got to come out of the gates faster. We got to play more consistent. It's not a try hard thing or an effort thing with our guys. It's more of an execution and focus thing. They work really, really hard and they fight. But, sometimes they're pressing, and it causes some, damage.
Yeah. Now, what was your message to the team, and how have you started the week out of practice?
You know, the message was to the team, it was, you know, we got to do a better job taking, you know, our meetings to the field. And, you know, you can't just go out there like the Tasmanian devil, run around and expect to, you know, see production. There's got to be, you know, focused intent to your job per play. And I said, you know, there's going to be changes. You know, we're going to move guys around to different positions. You know, guys who may think they have their starting job locked down, they're going to be looking over their shoulder. You make a mistake in practice, I'm going to take you off the field. And, you know, we'll see how that pans out by the end of the week. But there needs to be more accountability to your 111th each play.
We saw a little glimpse of Keon Kenner. I asked you about him last night. I know you're high on him. Speaking of guys getting chances here, the freshman, out of Philadelphia? Yeah, he's out of Philadelphia. Will we see more Keon Kenner running back this week?
We will. Keon, unfortunately, on his fourth carry, put the ball on the ground. That was one of three times we put the ball on the ground Saturday night, which is, you know, inexcusable and can't happen. But the talent's there. I mean, the first play of the series, he rips off a 14-yard run. And, you know, then the freshman kind of kicked in. He made a mental error on the second play. And if he would have just been a little bit tighter on his track with the play we called, he might have run for 30. So, you know, there's a lot of talent in Keon. We just got to harness it and put it in the right direction. I think we'll have another good back.
How about the talent in Jordan Ray? And we mentioned him on the UAlbany Football Coaches Show last night. You're seeing a lot out of Jordan Ray and improvement each and every week at that wide receiver spot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, by the stat sheet, it doesn't look like he's doing a ton. But, you know, day in, day out, when you go out to practice, you know, Jordan understands our offense better than just about anybody out there. You know, he played quarterback for me for 2 years. So, you know, you can just really slot him anywhere on the field and he'll know what to do. And then, you know, because he's been playing quarterback forever, he's finally starting to learn the craft of wide receiver, you know, how to utilize leverage against a coverage player, you know, when to set it down in the zone, where the zones are, coverage recognition is good. And, you know, the thing you worry about all the time when you move quarterbacks to receivers, will they block? And, you know, Jordan loves blocking, which, you know, kind of makes eventually he'll be, you know, the whole total package.
Coach, road trip to Villanova coming up this Saturday, where they're 4-1 in the CAA conference. Obviously, a very good football team. what's on the scouting report. What have you seen from the film so far about this Wildcats team that's going to pose some challenges to your team that you want to try and stop?
Yeah, you know, start on offense up front. They're big veteran guys. You know, one of their players, Temmy, it seems like he's been there since 2007. you know, and they got, you know, a stable of three really good running backs. You know, it's like big, medium, and small, and big is fast, and medium's fast, and small's real fast. You know, outside of the receiver position, they brought in a kid named Luke Colella from Princeton, who was an all-Ivy League receiver. He's really good. You know, he's their top receiver. And then Pat McQuaid's a transfer they brought in from Nicholls State, who played a lot of ball down there in Thibodaux and came up to Villanova, and he's doing a good job. He's a really, really cerebral player. He's a lefty. So offensively, it's another good unit. They give you a lot of misdirection and formation things to adjust to. And then, you know, defensively, they're young on the back end and more veteran as you get closer to the ball. They play a hybrid 3-3-5 stack defense, which, you know, was in vogue in, like, the late 2000s at West Virginia and Iowa State and San Diego State. And it's a tough scheme to crack because they give you odd angles in the run game. But there's ways to do it, and, you know, I've been around this conference long enough and seen it long enough that I feel like I have a good beat on it.
All right, Coach, when you talk about, you know, Villanova here, what would you say are a couple of things that must happen Saturday for this to turn into a good football game and give you guys an absolute chance to pull out the victory?
And not in this particular order, but we got to be able to stop the run. You know, we got to be able to hit on our shots offensively. And then we got to protect and take the ball away from, you know, we got to protect ourselves and take it away. We have not forced enough turnovers this season. And, you know, when you're talking about a game that's so high on emotion, you know, that ball is so important. So if you give it up, you give up momentum. If you take it, you gain momentum. And we got to be able to swing that pendulum in the Danes' way.
Coach Ambrose, always a pleasure, my friend. Safe trip to Philly. I know you guys are leaving on Friday. I'll see you down on the field a couple hours prior to kickoff, and wish you nothing but the best of luck.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Coach. Jared Ambrose, trying to get this thing turned around. But the schedule is extremely difficult. Villanova, you're playing. I looked at this before the season started. I went, all right. When you get to CAA conference, what teams are you playing? Well, I looked, and sometimes you can't go by this, but I felt like this year you might be able to.
Yeah.
I'm looking, what are the top five preseason teams? Were they ranked in the preseason?
Well, you got three of them already.
And Rhode Island was one.
Yeah.
Villanova was in the top five. William and Mary was in the top five. And that's who you have in a row here. Rhode Island, we're going to Villanova. You're going to William and Mary.
There's one more on there.
And there's Monmouth. At the end of the season,
3-0, and Monmouth's on that list.
And Monmouth is really good.
And you got New Hampshire, who's sixth. I mean, the only team in the top five right now you don't play is Maine.
Yeah.
That's right now. So you know, Elon.
I mean, a Bryant team is not having a great year, right?
Bryant's winless. Towson 1-2. Those are winnable games back at home.
Those are your two back-to-back home games, and then on a row. Obviously, it's not a playoff season, but you're trying to see, okay, what games can you right the ship with and get some victories to feel positive? And again, I didn't even get into this with Coach, but there are 11 players this year that have suffered season-ending injuries.
Can't control.
That's an awful lot.
Yeah, it's an awful lot, and it's tough, too. And they're key pieces on defense.
They are.
Leading
Ron
tacklers.
Holmes being out is
yeah,
huge.
And also on the pass rush side of things, too, Ibrahim Sanogo, who the hype was real, too.
And the other one, and I don't think he's going to try. We might see him on the field Saturday, but I don't think so. But it'd be great if we do. That means he might be able to contribute the rest of the year. Caden Birdie's really hurt.
Yeah.
But this is his last go around. Like, he's probably done with football when this season is over. Okay. And he would love to be able to play some games to end his college football career.
Veteran receiver.
And
on
he's
that
a
team.
Veteran receiver, but he's really hurt. And I know he's been trying this week a little bit in practice. I don't know if he's going to be able to go, but if he's out there in the field, he definitely can be. Can be a factor.
Well, you know what turns things around? You mentioned it. Villanova, William and Mary. You find a way to get a win in one, if not both those games. You know, where you're an underdog, it'd be considered an upset. It can happen. You never know in college football. But yeah, Saturday, 3:30 here on the team. We'll be on the play-by-play.
We will. And then, this season quickly flying by. And then we'll be right into the college basketball season for UAlbany at Marquette on Monday, November the 3rd. And then we have a little overlap and will be into the hoop season before you know it. All right, we are back, and it's the time of the week and the hour of the week that we talk Adirondack Thunder hockey with the head coach, Sylvain Cloutier, and he joins us here to begin hour number three on a Wednesday on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Sylvain, it's Roger and MJ. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man.
We're good. Thanks,
Coach. We're good, and it looks like you're off to a good start here.
Yeah, no, it was a good first game, obviously, starting on the road, and we played extremely well in the first period, and then we got away from it in the second, and then found a way in the third to get back to what the way we can play, and found a way to get those 2 points.
Yeah, 5-3 winners at Worcester on Sunday to begin the season, and now you've got a road game coming up on Friday, and then you're at home on Saturday against Trois-Rivières. What did you like most about your team in that first game, and how did it feel, Sylvain, coaching this team your first time as the head coach of the Adirondack Thunder? And I know it wasn't at home, so it'll be a bigger deal at home, but what was it behind that bench coaching this team to a win in your first game?
Yeah, it was pretty nervous, right? A little, not, I wouldn't say stress, excitement and nerves at the same time, right? Finally when the puck dropped, it was for real. Even though we went through the two exhibition games, it's still not the same. And to finally play that regular season game, it's quite the start too, because the lights kept going on and off. So it was like, are we ever going to play this game? And the game was getting delayed, and I was like, holy! I was looking at Ben, and we're like, are we ever going to play this game? And finally, the lights stayed on, and we were able to play.
All right, let's talk about some of your give me a little bit on some of your individual performances here. How about Justin Taylor scored in a season opener? It was his 291st coach ECHL goal.
Yeah, no, Taylor is one of those guys we can rely on, and it was nice for him to get off to a good start, right? He's one of the veteran leaders in our room, and it was such a nice play from Squires too. First year guy playing in the league, playing with the veterans. So it was a nice play, and it's always nice to see the older guys there get rewarded.
Is Brandon McManus going to be somebody, coach, you'll rely on to put the puck in the back of the net for you on a consistent basis this season?
Yeah, McManus has been known to score goals. So we try to divide our lines. I call them units. We want to have four units and attack teams, and we threw McManus with two guys that work hard, that compete, and we felt that on every line we could have someone that can be dangerous, and he is dangerous. If he gets that opportunity, Mac, hopefully we'll rely on him to get 20 to 30 for us, which would be a great year for him and a great year obviously helping us. But yeah, I know he's got that scoring touch for sure.
Coach, you went 1-for-100% execution on the power play on Sunday. What did you make your group out there when you had the man advantage?
Yeah, it was good. We moved the puck really well. We had a lot of good looks. And, Tails being out there, he, exactly what we've been working on, and ended up working. It was, Dylan Went did all the work on the wall, got the puck, gave it to Squires, and Squires found Taylor, who tipped it in. It was a perfect play. But yeah, no, we just started working. Like I said, during the exhibitions, we didn't work on special teams. We were more focused on our D zone and our forechecking system and all that stuff. But we've been working at it more. We'll work at it again tomorrow, get prepared for the weekend. But as long as we get good looks, the guys are doing their job then.
Good performances out of Dylan Wen, who had a couple of points. Brian Carabas had a couple of points. I mean, you certainly played well. A nice way to kick off this season. How was the goaltending, Sylvain?
You know what? Yeah, no. Brenny was outstanding. Like, he made some really big saves, and especially in the second period, because they were coming at us. And if it wasn't for him, he gave us a chance to win. That's what you ask your goaltenders to do, right? Give you a chance to win every night. And he definitely did that. He had a great training camp. We saw him for the first time at the prospect tournament in Buffalo. Like, we knew he had played here for 2 years, but he was a young goalie that came out of junior hockey at 20 and was thrown out there with the, experienced pro guys. And it's a big jump from junior hockey to the pro level. And also, it takes time for goalies to mature, right? Usually they don't mature until 26, 27. So he's still a young goalie, the prospect. But you can see he came in really well prepared. And yeah, he gave us a chance on Sunday.
All right, what's the matchup? I mean, do you look at tape? I guess it's so early on how much tape you have, but what do you see on this weekend with Trois-Rivières on the road Friday, and then you get them at home on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean we watched their home opener. Obviously, you know, it's still early watching tape. There's going to be a lot of changes in lineups and stuff. They had a couple guys call up, just like we had Brodeur get called up, and you never know who you're going to face when you get there. But they're a skilled team. They can skate and they can play, and they're quick at their transition. So we're going to have to be well prepared that they are going to come at us. When they played us in the exhibition game, they were fast. Like compared to the team we played on the Friday night in Reading, it was a much slower paced game than then we played Trois-Rivières. So I think that works in our favor. We're a good skating team and we're heavy and should make it for a great matchup this weekend.
Sylvain, always a pleasure, coach. We appreciate you and congrats on that, getting that first win. And I'm sure you'll feel you're going to be pumped up in front of that home crowd this weekend. I can promise you that. And I hope you knock down another win.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I just wanted to say, let's go Blue Jays.
Go Blue Jays.
Oh, there it is.
Toronto.
There it is.
Hey, coach, I mean, I don't know if you know the local angle, but we're playing it up. We got the kid, Jeff Hoffman, who's the closer that shut the door the other night and sent them. He's a Shaker High School grad. He's a Section 2 player from Latham, New York.
Oh, is he? That's awesome. Yeah, I'm a huge Blue Jays fan, so when now they play Friday, Saturday, so I got to need updates here.
There you go.
Check my phone between periods. But no, like I said, it was a great week, right? The Blue Jays won and we won. So
yeah, for sure.
And
now I give you some helpful information there, a little tidbit that the Hoffman kid is local. So there you go.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, thank you so much.
All right, Sylvain, take care, man. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys.
That's the head coach, Sylvain Cloutier. He's going to be good with us.
I like him. A good personality. Yeah, a little French-Canadian in there. Wonder Toronto, right?
I don't know. Sometimes I can just get a feel whether they like doing this or don't like doing this. And after a couple
guy.
Of weeks, I feel like he likes coming on and talking about his team and talking about the games.
He's got a good sense of humor,
too. It's always good.